It's unbelievable. You're right. It's unbelievable. Evidently, that's all I can tell you. Evidently. Evidently. All right, we can begin. We have a world to do. Today is Sunday, March 8th, 2020, and we are relaxed here, although the tension in our branch in New York is unbelievable. First university to shut down because of coronavirus, Yeshiva University. Unbelievable publicity, leading article, New York Times, Daily News, New York Post. Wow, publicity they didn't want. I said a different vote. If you know the Gemara in Brachot, that you meet the bear and you think you're safe, and then you meet the lion. I said our poor Talmud, Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman, he thought with the homo and lesbian issue we hit the bottom. He didn't realize what's going to come afterwards. On the other hand, the basketball team did great. So everyone is Friday afternoon. They won. They won before Shabbos. All right. I say hello to the wonderful students in front of me, to those across the world. Just coming back to an earlier lecture, Rabbi Mark Wiener, Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wiener, sent me, Rebbe, I recall hearing of the name of the Rav that aspirin is considered a malchol bari, because many people take it daily. And that makes sense. In other words, remember I told you I asked the Rav about eye drops, and the Rav said healthy people take eye drops too, so there's no problem with sechikak samamin. And Mark says that he heard the name of the Rav, aspirin, and it's true. I take an aspirin daily. Here in Israel, if any male who turns 65, it's in the computer, the doctor will prescribe for you the low-dose aspirin. I think it's 83 milligrams, if I'm not mistaken. And it's automatic. It's in the computer. It's only certain cases where it creates bleeding, so then they'll cut it down. But otherwise, it's supposed to help with the heart. Everything works with percentages, so percentages show. All right, so last week we dealt with the last few weeks. We have an interesting problem, and I think everyone in the world agrees if you have two doctors or two soldiers in the army, one is frum and one isn't, or as a Chabadnik would say, one is frum and one is not yet frum. So you let the frum person do the operation. He'll know what he can do, what he can't do. Certainly in the army with Shmirat, because this problem only comes up with Shmirat. If you're in battle, there's no Shabbos. Everyone has to do what they have to do. If it's not battle, drilling a munim, according to the laws of the land of Israel, is not permitted on Shabbos. So the question comes up with Shmirat. And here, you should not go out of your way to avoid Shmirat and Shabbat. If you're assigned, take it. If you're not assigned, then you don't have to go out of your way. That's the way the army works. Everyone gets a turn. But halacha l'maisa, someone who's learned, the more learned you are, the better that you should be the one to set the example. And the Rambam, no matter which way you go, and I'm not tell you how much ink has been spent on trying to deal with the Rambam in the context of the Gemara, because everyone learns the Gemara, gedolim, meaning in the sense of age. But the Rambam uses the word gedole Yisrael, not Yisraelim gedolim, which would have been the proper Hebrew. But Gedole Yisrael v'chachamecha. And it's an interesting Rambam. And halacha l'maaser, anyone from the Beit Brisk knows, the biggest Talmud Chacham present has to be Mechal Shabbos. And I don't use the word Chal Shabbos, you won't get upset, has to be Doche Shabbos. And with the story of the Rav, a number of people remarked to me that probably my answer is correct, that Rav Chaim is on the other side of the room. And when Rav Meisher asked the doctor, he told him immediately, make the light brighter. And Rav Meisher said, Shabbos, ef shedapen das nish. And then Rav Chaim said to his son-in-law, to his son, to the Dayan, Rav Simcha Zalig Riga, Mainzunas and Amaritz. And at that moment, Reb Simcha Zelig Rieger jumped and made the light higher. All right, Adkan. My dear friends, I have to tell you what we're about to do. Dov, where did you go to high school?
Chaim Berlin.
You went to Chaim Berlin, you started learning, you were learning Gemara. All right, you were in the minor leagues. Let's say you were single A. Where'd you go to college? Yeshiva University. All right, you learned Gemara in college. You were in AAA. Then you learned by the Rav. You learned for Smicha. You were in the big leagues. What we're beginning now is the World Series. This is only for Scotty if he promises to learn for the next 70, 80 years so he'll appreciate what we're about to do. Okay? You take it on the easy level, but wow. Now, what's amazing is Reb Simcha Zelig Rieger, who we mentioned a minute ago, this whole shiur begins because of his grandson. His grandson, I mentioned something about the grandson to you, and I have more to say, and we'll have more to say down the line. We're talking about Chaim Dovber Galevsky. Chaim Dovber Galevsky, the grandson of Reb Simcha Zelig. His father was Reb Simcha Zelig's son-in-law. His father was killed in the Holocaust. He's a survivor, got to America after World War II, learned in Lakewood, and then started teaching at Yeshiva University in 1950. He taught in TI. Anyone remember the name? If you went to Yeshiva, yeah. You may not have. No, but we were, you know, in my days the yeshiva was much smaller, so we knew every Rebbe from the yeshiva proper, from TI. I can just see what he looks like. He was Zeichel La'arich, a German. Eli, do you remember him too? Oh, you had him as a teacher. So he was Zeichel La'arich, a German Tobin. He just died a few weeks ago. I think I told you I wrote a condolence letter to my classmate, Normie Sohn, Dr. Norman Sohn, because Normie's partner, his medical partner, with Rabbi Galevsky was his Rebbe. And a number of times Rabbi Galevsky visited the offices and Normie knew him too, and they were very fond of him. Now, this grandson of Rabbi Simcha Zelig Rieger, first of all, we have to go back to Brisk. All of you know it's not a fairy tale, it's an absolute fact that Rabbi Chaim Brisker did not want to paskin. His mind was too innovative, and he could always see two sides. And I don't have to tell you, I've told you many times, it's not for now to repeat, but the most stupid answer I gave in my life was 1961 in the rabbinate, when I was asked about Yotzeit and Chodesh Adar, when there's an Aleph, a Chodesh Aleph and a Chodesh Bet. And I told this Balabas and Amaretz he should observe two Adarim and Samach. Like a Sapaiskim, best to say Kaddish twice. He walked away, said the rabbi's an idiot. But you see, if you see, this way, that way, it's no, you got to give an answer. You got to the Adarishon, Adarsheni, whatever, the trick in his treif, the thick in his kosher. Don't play games. So when Reb Chaim succeeded his father in Brisk, again, I trust you know the story. Voloshin was closed in 1892. What the reasons Voloshin was closed? Many reasons. Leave it for another time. I've lectured about it extensively. Suffice it to say that the government was worried stiff. Jews involved in anti-czar activities all over. This we discovered when communism fell and the archives were opened. The real story came out. And these documents have been translated into Hebrew. Professor Shol Stamfa, who I yet remember from 69, we came in Aliyah basically the same time, lovely individual. So Shol Stamfa had to revise his published doctorate on the basis of what we got from the archives. But the Voloshin was closed because the government did not trust what was happening with the students, the machlekes, the fighting between the supporters of Reb Chaim Berlin, the supporters of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, and if they can fight over that, they certainly can fight the Tsar. And as you know, unfortunately, among the revolutionaries, a good percentage, way beyond the percentage in the population, were Jewish. So this was one reason why the lesson closed. The Kari, the world will tell you it closed because they didn't want to introduce secular studies. It's not true. They did introduce a little Russian. They could have worked it out with the government, but this seems to be the main reason from the Secret Service files that were released after the fall. Well, the Lushin closed, the Prime was kicked out of the Lushin, the Netziv was kicked out of the Lushin. The Netziv went to Warsaw, planning to go on Aliyah. Vic, he was not Tzeche, he died a year later in Warsaw. Reb Chaim went to Brisk to his father's house, he went home, and within the year, the Beit HaLevi died. So the people turned to Reb Chaim to succeed his father. Reb Chaim made a t'nai that he wouldn't paskin, but he said, I have someone who can be the Av Beit Din, and he brought a Reb Simcha Zelig Rieger, whom he knew from the Lushin. Reb Simcha Zelig Rieger already was a posek mufak all his life. He specialized in psak, and the people were a little bit upset. He was a youngster. He was under 30 yet. So they made a t'nai that for the first year, he would be mishamish, the poskim, the dayanim. And then if the dayanim felt he could be the Av Beit, then he would take over. Within a year, he took over until the day that Hitler killed him, perished in the Holocaust, 42, I believe. He paskined every shayla that came to the Lushin. Now, his grandson winds up in America. Now let's understand something. This grandson is both, on one hand, from Brisk, Voloshin, Soloveitchik family. On the other hand, in America, his first years, he studies with Rav Aaron in Lakewood. So that here's a man who is attached to two individuals, Moreno v'Rabbeinu Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, and Reb Aaron Kotler. I told you the story that I repeated again just to put it in context. I was in Lakewood, Bididi HaViyuvda. I even remember the parents, the name. It was the Hoberman family. And they had a Shalom Zacha, they had a Brit, and Rav Chaim Dovbeg-Alevsky was there, was spending Shabbos, an old-time Talmud, a Talmud Mufak of Rav Aaron Kotler. Could be he studied with him in Schlitz too, and not just Lakewood. And they were mechaber him to say a few words Friday night at the Shalom Zacha. It was Pashut Chukat, and he spoke about the enigma of the Paraduma Metacher Tameim u'metamei tahorim. And they were furious at him, the kanoim, the whispering, the chutzpah comes back to Lakewood and justifies his being in YU. You know, what he was saying was, yes, I'm in YU, but at least I'll be metacher the tameim. And even though I might suffer, you're going to think I'm became tamei, but that's a paraduma. Oh, they were furious, like I told you, Matzoi Shabbos, they wanted to cut his beard. I heard the talk. They were going to go in the middle of the night with scissors, but they held off. Now, this Reb Chaim Dovbeg-Alevsky goes on to teach at Yeshiva University. He published basically two svarim, which in reality are about seven different svarim. The svarim have different divisions. The sefer I wanted was the one which he calls Shnei Yovlim, or Tre Yovlim, two Yovels. And I wonder, what's this title about? The sefer is rare. I don't have it. I'm sure they have it in the library in YU, but I'm 7,000 miles away. So I have to thank Yomo and Rabbi Rosenberg, who had learned at the Kollel years ago. They went to Hebrew Books, I think it is, and they printed out the sefer for me. Anyway, I started the sefer Shabbos. I tell you, my enjoyment is overwhelming. He makes Rabbi Kamenetsky, who wrote Making of a Gadol, he makes him look mild by comparison. Oh, does he have opinions, does he give you stories? What does this book mean, Two Yovels? It was published in honor of 1986. In 1986, Yeshiva Shibshol Chanan celebrated 100 years since the founding Eli of Yeshivat Eitz Chaim, which morphs into Yeshiva Shibshol Chanan. Follow? 100 years. Also, began teaching 1950, Scotty, 36 years, teaching Elliot Rosner and his cohorts and friends in Yeshiva University. This volume he put out, it is invaluable. He's very opinionated. Oh, if the world would know this volume, they would put him in the Kherim. But the difference is no one cares. The people he knocks down, none of their relatives are alive. Reb Nassim Kamenetsky turned Reb Aaron Cutler into a human being. And Reb Aaron has a lot of descendants, and some of them are way, way right of Reb Aaron Cutler and the rest of his family. The Daila Hakima Beremisa. So this book, Yitzchak, is very, very valuable, and I'll tell you why. In the first part, he redoes the history of Yeshivat Eitz Chaim. And he takes Gilbert, Rabbi Dr. Gilbert Klapman, who wrote the first book. There are two books written on the history of Yeshiva University. The second book is by a guy named Rothkopf. It's called Bernard Drevel, Builder of American Jewish Orthodoxy. The first book is the history of Yeshiva University, 1886 to 1915. And that was the doctorate of Rabbi Dr. Gilbert Klapperman from Lawrence. His shul was the first big, massive shul that succeeded in conquering Lawrence for Shmirat Shabbat and Torah. So I said to myself, how the heck does this Golubsky, this greenhorn, did he speak English, Elliot?
No.
Very poorly. Very poorly. What language did he teach in? Hebrew and Yiddish. Yiddish was his native language, but he knew Hebrew too. I said, what does he know? He interviewed when he started teaching at YU, some of the old-time Rabbanim, like Rabbi Yisrael Rosenberg, lived a few doors from him in Borough Park. He bothered Rosenberg. Hey, Rosenberg, when you're older, you tell stories, you tell the truth. You have nothing to lose. He has stories how the yeshiva began, who the helpers were, who the real Rabbanim were, who were the Rabbanim who were only interested in money, who were the Rabbanim who held by learning. Wow, does he add details that I'm sorry I didn't have when I lectured on Yeshivat Eitz Chaim 4, 5, 6 years ago. All right. Why am I telling you all this? This tshuva that we're about to touch is written to Rabbi Golubsky. Unfortunately, we don't have the original question. In other words, halavai, Reb Menashe Klein would have published the original letter that he got from Reb Chaim Dov Begalevsky. But I'm going to reconstruct the letter, and Elliot is going to say to me, Rebbe, are you sure you're right? 99%. I don't want to say 100 because no one can, only the Ribbono Shel Olam can say 100. 99%. Now, why did I tell you about his background? Okay. Let me read a Rambam to you. Again, I'm cautioning you in advance. I'm not redoing 2.5 years of my shurim on a riven. They were among the best shurim I ever gave, but it's not for now, but we have to touch it. Hilchot Shabbos, Perek Yudalad, Halacha Aleph. Aba Rishiyot L'Shabbat. Rishut HaYochid, Urishut HaRapim, Kamalet U'makam Ptur. You all know four different Rishiyot L'Shabbat. No big deal. Ezehi Rishut HaRabim. Midbarat, Yarim, Shpakim, Drachim, Hafulashim Lechem. Ubilvad Sheyiye Rochav HaDerech Tet Zayin Ama. Velo Yiye Alav Tikra. This is the psak of the Rambam. What makes a Rishut HaRabim? A highway. Place for people to walk. How wide? Test Zion Amot. You'll figure out. In feet, what's that, 30 feet? Who's a mathematician here? And now they say, what, 18 inches? 18 times 17? No, figure it out. Divide it up. Put it back in feet. Gentlemen, what do you say? Jack, you're a mathematician.
You don't have to be. You have a calculator.
Let me say that, whatever. Whatever. Ted Sayanama. All right, Ted Sayan. Gentlemen, if we paskin like this Rambam, there is practically nowhere in the world where you can build an Erev. You know how you have to build an Erev for a Shutta Rab Meli? Doors. A wall. Yeah, you're going to have a little petach. That's it. That's the Erev. It's an open Yerushalmi. Yerushalayim, you could have never built an Erev there if not for the fact that the walls are closed at night. Baruch Hashem. Yerushalayim. Big population. Many years ago. Today too. Baruch Hashem. Build an air, Ted Sayan, how much? Just think what we're talking about. There isn't a street in Jerusalem.
Now you have a mathematician.
Michael, I just have to tell you in parentheses, I'm not that stupid. I know there would have been assimilation in America. I know the pressures. But I'm saying that had there not been the playing around with halakha, thousands of Jews would have remained from Orthodox Rabbanim would have been there, people still. But when someone says to you, my rabbi says I can drive on Shabbos, and then you think of these thousand, there'd be 1 million Jews today. Anyway, be it as it may, I agree with you. I understand just what you're saying, but I'm also right. Michael, Ted Sayan Amot times 18 inches, what do you get?
What?
Ted Sayan, that's 16
right.
Amot. A number's from here to here, so it's about 18 inches. What do you get? 18 times 16.
How much is 18 times 16?
Yeah.
You have a calculator?
See what's happened to us? Even professors of mathematics
it's not
need
mathematics. I told Yitzhak a million times, arithmetic has nothing to do with mathematics.
Okay, so then I'm still digging. Gentlemen, okay,
if 24 feet.
24 feet you get? Okay, 24 feet, good enough. What did I come up with? I was too much. I came up 30, I was machmir. 24 feet. Gentlemen, there is no place, basically, you can build an Erev outside of your backyard. But you're talking here, drachim, mefulashim, streets, and it's more than that. The Rambam even holds that the street curves, it doesn't matter. Some say it has to be mefulash from one part of the city to the other. All right, this is the Rambam. Over this Rambam, tremendous machloket exists until this very moment. All of you know that the Rav would not build an Erev in Boston. All of you know that the Lubavitcher Rebbe was totally opposed to building an Erev for many reasons. But afterwards, the pressures of the Shluchim, today you don't have a Shluch in a Favaf in a place without an Erev. But all of you know that the Rebbe Aaron Lichtenstein never carried in Yerushalayim. I don't know about when he moved to the Gush. I don't know what he did in the Gush. If anyone can tell me, I'll be happy to hear. But I can tell you that he never carried in Yerushalayim. All of you know that Rabbi Aaron Soloveitcher, Kol Zman, right? You didn't have an Erev in Chicago when Rabbi Aaron was alive. He was supposed. You have an Erev today, I would imagine.
The last 30-ish years.
The last 30 years already. All right. So you see what we're talking about, and this is the Rambam. All right. We are Samach on a Shita, which may or may not be accurate. It's a whole question. But all right, at least it's brought down Rashi in the poskim that you need 600,000 Jews to Yitziat Mitzrayim. If you don't have 600,000 Jews out in the street at the same time, It's not Rishut HaRabim. That's where we're Samarchan, and even there, there are tremendous problems. What? In Yerushalayim, you don't have 600,000 people out in the street. You have over 1 million people in Yerushalayim. What? And you take Manhattan, Times Square, what are we talking about? Lo Pashut, all right, Rakefet lectured on it for 2.5 years. All the Lumdis, Achin, Acher, both sides. But now, let's come back to Galevsky. Galevsky is an invenechad to the Lithuanian world. He's an invenechad to Reb Simcha Zelig Riga, to Reb Chaim Briska. Remember where he's coming from. By the way, in his writings, his Derech Eretz for the Rav is unbelievable. The titles he gives the Rav, he tells the Gadol Shebegadolim. I mean, he has Derech Eretz for Aaron Cutler, but nothing compares to his Derech Eretz for the Rav and his relationship with the Rav. He could bother the Rav, ask the Rav questions, and the Rav always gave him very insightful answers. So here you have someone like Rabbi Galevsky, and he's coming from the Litvisha world. And the Litvisha world, and the Mishkanot Yaakov, he paskin that we're samach on the Rambam. You can't paskin against the Rambam. This was, we're talking, the Mishkanot Yaakov, we're talking a Talmud Mufak of Rav Chaim V'Lashin. We're talking about the heart of Lithuania. And he paskin loch halacha that the Rambam asses these type of eruvin, and everything we're doing in Chicago and in parts of New York and in Yerushalayim is absolutely a farce. It is not halachically valid. Ad kedei kach that Rav Moshe Bick wrote in his tshuva about the Erev in Borough Park or Flatbush at the time, that anyone who carries is Mechalel Shabbos Bepachesia, with all that that implies. So he's coming, the Mishkanot Yaakov. Yomo, I thanked you a few minutes ago, but you didn't hear. He paskins like the Mishkanot Yaakov. Wow! The Bet Ephraim was the Pelisha, was a Posek Mufak. He took the Mishkanot Yaakov to task, and he knocked him down, fought with him, knocked him out. So here you have Rabbi Galevsky, who is Litvish, an enikel of Reb Simcha Zelig Riga, and here you have Reb Menashe Klein that we have an Erev in Chicago. Thank Reb Menashe Klein. That you'll have an Erev in Brooklyn, in Flatbush, in Borough Park. Thank Reb Menashe Klein. That you'll have an Erev in Yerushalayim. Thank Reb Menashe Klein. And he's upset with Reb Menashe Klein. This is not a small matter. Carrying on Shabbos Vik, you're talking an Av Malacha. Hotza'ah. Wow. More than that, what he's touching upon in his letter is the heart of Psak. What gives us the right to go against the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah? And wait a minute, we have a klal all the way from the Gemara, all the way down to the Rishonim, the Achronim, all the way down to this very moment, halacha kabatra'i. Didn't I give endless lectures on that? The law is like the last authority. Ein ledayan ela mashenov ra'ot. Yiftach bedoro, kishmuel bedoro. So wait a minute. You have the Shulchan Aruch, you have the Ramah, and on the other hand, halacha kabatra'i. And Galevsky, Rav Galevsky, is hitting away at Rav Menashe Klein, but he's raising basic issues of Dvar Hashem Zu Halacha. what Ratefet calls the halachic process, the dynamics of the halacha. Fabulous issues. More than that, he evidently, Rabbi Galevsky was a very clever individual. Elliot, am I right or wrong? He was not a dummy. He was a very clever individual. So he didn't want to come in and beat the hell out of Reb Menashe Klein only over the Erev, because then he would understand he's out to get me, because the world was shaking. You remember Reb Moshe, Reb Menashe Klein, what was going on? So he asked him some other questions. Some other questions. Vic, Chol HaMoed Pesach is coming. Whether you like it or not, you're going to be in Israel. You have no choice. Your brother's inviting you to Borough Park to his Seder. Reb David Miller just canceled his trip. He was supposed to go this Saturday night. My grandchildren just canceled their trip. They were supposed to go to see their other grandmother, great-grandchildren, their great-grandmother, who's in her late 90s and wanted them to see, wants to see them, bring them all, everything was set. Canceled. So you're here, Chol HaMoed. Tell me, you're davening in Prima Levi, in your building, in your shoe, okay? Tell me, you're going to put on tefillin? Elliot, you're going to put on tefillin? No,
upstairs.
Tell me, tell me. Yitzchak, you're going to put on tefillin?
No.
Ribbono shel Olam, three scandalim we just heard. Three scandals. The Shulchan Aruch paskins, the Ramah paskins, forget that. Put on tefillin. The Rav Paskin, put on tefillin. I'll show you all. I'll give you the makara there. Ribbono shel Olam. And you're not putting on tefillin. How do we have a right to undo the halacha? And he's asking a fabulous question. How do we have a right to go against, we're Ashkenazim. How do we have a right to go against the Ramah? How do we have a right? Why did Rav Avadja write so many times, Ashkenazim Yotzim Biyad Ramah? A beautiful thought. But here, we're laughing at the Ramah. We're pushing the Ramah totally aside. I'll ask you another question. I'll show you something. Tell me. When did you light candles, Vic, this Friday night?
Five.
20 minutes is also, that's not my point. I have a different point. I remember the late 40s, the early 50s in America, we lit candles, let's say 5:05. 30 minutes later, I saw refugees, survivors, going to mikveh, smoking cigarettes. Ellie, am I telling the truth? Yes or no? Jack?
I saw it in Toronto once.
You saw it once. If you were in Yerushalayim in 46, you would have seen it. The Satmarov himself. That may be the reason he had to get out. I'll give you a source in my Satmar lectures that you'll say, Rebbe, fabulous. How did you ever find it? Like I asked Yomo last week. I found it. I'll tell you how when we get there. Yitz, no, I want to ask you a question. When is sunset? When does the day end? When does the night begin? Now, you know how many lectures you can give on this topic, the Machloikis Rabbeinu Tam and the Goinim, the Goinic period I'm talking about. When is sunset? Now, I want to recommend, I want to thank Yomo who showed me the Sefer. I heard about it. It's called Sefer Otzach HaBrit. And it's by the Yushalmi Mohel, the famous Mohel, Yosef David Weisberg. And I'm quoting from Helik Sheni, beginning Simon Chet. And he gives you a very nice analysis of Shitat HaGoinim and Shitat Rabbeinu Tam. It's based upon a contradiction, the Gemara in Bracha, the Gemara in Shabbos, the Gemara in Pesachim, how much time you have for Bein HaShmoshetz, how far you can walk. If anyone wants it, you can take it later. I don't need it. I just wanted to show it to you. But to put it in very popular language, according to the Gaonim, the minute the sun starts to set, that's Bein Hashmasha. According to Rabbeinu Tam, Bein Hashmasha doesn't begin until after the stars come out. Could even be it's a little bit after the stars come out that there's really darkness. L'maynaf gemina, you know very well.
But that's when it begins.
Yeah, yeah. According to Rabbeinu Tam, you can yet smoke when we're being Mekabel Shabbos. You understand? According to Rabbeinu Tam, you can go to mikvah when we're being Mekabel Shabbos. Okay. And Matzoy Shabbos, when does it end for us? All right, New York, I used to keep 46 minutes, if I recall. New York, New Jersey, Chabadnikim, I think, keep 42 minutes. I think the first man is 42, but I kept 46. Here in Yerushalayim, it depends at the time of the year. Essentially, it's about 35 minutes because we're on a mountain, so the sunset is much quicker than when you're down at sea level. But Ribbono Shel Olam, what are we dealing with here? A chiyuv skila. And I can tell you a guy named Rakefet, davening in his foyer, where you come into the lobby, that's the word I want. When you come into 18 Berlin in the lobby for the last 30 years, outside of Motzei Yom Kippur, every Motzei Shabbos and Motzei Yom Tov, we have a minion. Sometimes we have 30, 40, 50 people, because people come from all their houses. And there's another minion a block and a half away on Tayasim. So Rakepit's looking at his watch, 6:18, see, oh, the elevator is here. He takes out a key. They're in the middle of Aleinu, turns off the elevator, the automatic elevator. Ribbono Shel Olam, Rabbeinu Tam, it's not even sunset yet. And you're turning off the automatic elevator. The Rav, how many minutes did he hold? 72, 96, an achtel, remember he added. Anyone who studied with Rabban Soloveitchik, David Applebaum, I once called him after 72 minutes, and it was still Shabbos. He, hello? That's all he said. He's like a doctor, you know. He has to answer the telephone, so it's a medical emergency. I had a shayla to ask him. Someone asked me a shayla with medicine. I turned to David, Hashem, you come to Mo. But, wow, what's going on here? How do you have the right to be mekil when you're dealing with shaylas like this? No, give me another example. Brit Milah. Kid is born 5 minutes after Shkia, 10 minutes after Shkia. Let's say it's Wednesday. Kid is born 10 minutes after Shkia. According to the Gaonim, the Brit would be next Thursday. It's after Shkia, 10 minutes already. Kid is born Thursday, Brit is next Thursday. According to Rabbeinu Tam, no Shaila, the Brit is next Wednesday. 8 days, he was born 5 minutes after Shkia. So what? It's still Wednesday. The real Shkia hasn't taken place. You see what you're dealing with here? And yet, we have machloket, we're mekil, a woman goes to mikvah, a woman has to count shivinikiyim. What are we talking about? Nightfall. When is nightfall? Which day is it? When does she go to mikvah? She goes 20 minutes after Shkia. According to Rabbeinu Tam, she's not allowed yet. It's not the seventh day. You follow me, Yomo? You can go on and on with examples, not just dealing with Anena Ben Yoimo, not just dealing with Yom Tov Sheni. You're dealing here with Karet. You're dealing here with Lavan. And yet, we take different positions, we change positions, we're mekil. What's going on here? And all this was a subterfuge. He didn't want Reb Menashe Klein to feel he's beating him up, so he asked him a number of questions. But Reb Menashe Klein, you know, a gaon adir, he already understood that the main question is how do you have the audacity to paskin against the Rambam, to paskin against Bris, to paskin against the Mishkan of Yaakov. How dare you? Who are you? And that really is the heart of the question. All right. With that introduction, we're ready to start the question. Mishnah Halachot Chelet Chet Siman Kuf Samech Chet. Yomo, did you read any part of what you printed out for me? Oh boy, if you read part of it, you would understand why that volume, if they put Reb Nosson into Chayrim, boy, what they would have done. But the difference is there's no one around to claim the covet of the Rabbanim that he knocks them out, money, America, assimilation. He's right with you, Michael. He understood America 100%. All right, tell me, did he ever talk about Jewish history in class?
No.
He taught what he teach, Gemara. Gemara. Just Gemara. He ever talk about his own life, about his grandfather, about Reb Simcha Zelig? But you knew that his grandfather and father perished in the Holocaust. That much you knew? He was, all right, interesting. All right, it's...
So that means he was also related to Dr. Riga, the Tanakh teacher.
Dr. Riga, the Tanakh teacher, was his uncle. Reb Moshe Aaron Riga was Reb Simcha Zelig's son. You didn't know that? It's his uncle. His mother married a Galevsky. His sister married a Galevsky. You want to give more of his yichus? Not so good, this part of the yichus. No, you tell me. You're living here enough years to know. There was a basketball team in Petach Tikva. Who was the coach of the basketball team? God have mercy. Simcha Zelig Riga. That was the son of the Tanakh teacher, Rabbi Dr. Moshe Aaron Riga. Simcha Zelig Riga, a Ramaz graduate. I don't want to go further. Forget about Chilul Shabbos and everything else. He took ill. He was, recovered. I think he's in a wheelchair today. So he was interviewed. Such vulgarity. God have mercy. Had a wonderful life. Wine, women, and song. So it just shows you all the yichus in the world. Eli thinks he has yichus. Eli, all the yichus will not get you anywhere. You have to become a giant of Torah, Yirat Shemayim, and Chassidut. You follow? The challenge is there. Ani modela HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I discovered my yichus after I achieved a little in Torah and Yirat Shemayim. Could you imagine that I come into the yeshiva in 1951 and told them, I'm Rabbi Rebel's cousin. Oh my gosh, not good, not good. I wouldn't have learned, wouldn't have tried, wouldn't have strived. 40 years after I got my doctorate on Rabbi Bernard Rebel, what I call it, vision and realization. Bernard Rebel, vision and realization is the name of my doctorate, not the book. I found out it's my cousin, Baruch Hashem. Today I boast I'm a blood relative of Rabbi Revel. But I have a right to boast, of course. Thank God I had a few other achievements before that. All right, back here. Watch. It's fabulous. Mishnah Halachat Chelet Chet Siman Kuf Samet Chet. And it's written 1982. Written Malat Kavod Yedid Nafshi Harav Hagon V'chulu V'chulu Reb Chaim Dovber Galevsky. And Acharei Drishat Shlom Kavod Tifato B'Yedidut. And he says, I know you, I like you, but I'm sorry I didn't answer you right away, but I heard that you were in Europe and I understood already you're not going to be at home, so I waited my answer. Now I answered you, Vayan Vayomer Salachti. Please forgive me for the delay. And he's saying to him, you write a lot and you're touching upon questions that are so basic to the halachic system. How can you differ on the Ramah? And yet we say, halacha kabat ra'i, and these two concepts don't fit together. They contradict each other. And you are hysterical. Oh, Ellie, you better close your ears on the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov HaKodesh and the Jews from Galicia and Hungary that don't put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. And in addition, you tell a story when you learned in Beit Medrash Gavoah in Lakewood Shechaser echad megadel tarnagolim nolad lo bein chamesh v'chatzi dakot achachashkia. Now, you don't know what that's about. I do. When I learned in Lakewood, Vineland, New Jersey, was not far from Lakewood. In Vineland, there were Ungarische Jews who evidently got there in the 30s, I would imagine, and they went into the same business they had in Hungary, chickens, eggs. And they did very well. And these were from Jews 100%. And they were very close to Lakewood. As a matter of fact, I think they supplied Lakewood with their eggs for the Beis Medrash, for the yeshiva. And the baby is born 5.5 minutes after sunset. And because these people were Hungarian, they turned to the Satmar Rav. And they asked the Rav when to make the Brit. And the Satmar Rav answered, on Sunday, Shehu Isruchak. Now, it's not explained in detail, but you have to read into it. What are we talking about? Let's go back. The baby was born 5.5 minutes after sunset on Wednesday. That means, according to the Goyim, according to us, according to the way Rabbi Reuben and Rabbi Zakkai would have paskened in the rabbinate, the brit should be next Thursday. 5.5 minutes Wednesday night is Thursday. It turns out Thursday and Friday were Yontif. Thursday and Friday, Yontif. Shabbos is Shabbos. Sunday they call Isruchag. The Satmar Rav Paskin make the bris Sunday. Why did he paskin that? Because the baby born after sunset is a suffolk. Once it's a suffolk, you can't be Mechalul Yontif, or you can't be Mechalul Shabbos for the eighth day. You have to give up the eighth day and do the Brit when you can. Wait a minute, Galevsky, Rabbi Galevsky is asking. If we paskin like Rabbeinu Tam, what's the problem? Baby is born Wednesday night, 5.5 minutes after Shkia. 5.5 minutes after Shkia, Eli, is absolutely Wednesday. Rabbeinu Tam, Thursday didn't begin yet. If that's the case, make the Brit on Wednesday. Wednesday's the eighth day. The baby was born on Wednesday. It's nowhere near Rabbeinu Tam Shkia. Why did the Satmar Rav paskin against his own tradition? And these are the questions that he's asking, that he's camouflaging the real question with. Tefillin on Chol HaMoed, Rabbeinu Tam, the Ga'anim, sunset. Where do you draw the line? Where's the psak? Where do you paskin? Where can you argue? Where can you change? Where do you continue Misoret of your forebears? And he's heading into the unbelievable question of how dare you paskin against the Mishkanot Yaakov and build a Erev when the street is Tetzayin Amot wide. Now, it's fascinating how Reb Menashe Klein handles these. The questions are real, and he says, you're absolutely right. Vilna and Chalamayd, the Vilna Gaon paskind, not to put them on. And Dafko, you criticize the Hasidim. Many Hasidim, Gedolei Yisrael, paskin to put on tefillin on Chalamayd. It's a tremendous machloket. And he quotes his great-grandfather, Menashe Klein, one of the great Hasidic Rebbeim that my great-great-grandfather said, Sheyesh lo gimu mayot tamim al pi nigla, v'gimu mayot tamim al pi nista, shetzarich lahaniach tefillin b'chol hamoed. And he says, you're right, it's a tremendous machloket. Let's look into the Shulchan Aruch. Let me give you the sources. You see the Shulchan Aruch? Hilchat Tefillin, Simin Lamed Bet, Simin Lamed Aleph. Simin Lamed Aleph. It's a small simin, Sif Aleph, Sif Bet. Shachar Paskins, B'Shabbos, B'Yontif, Asal Aniach Tefillin, Mipnei Sheheim Atzmam Ot. V'im Manichim Bechem Ot Acher, Hayazulzul Le'ot Shalachem. Shabbos and Yontif, we don't put on Tefillin. The days themselves testify to God's existence. If you put on Tefillin, it's like you're smacking the Shabbat, you're smacking the Yontif. You're saying it's not enough. And this is Halacha Psuka. No one in the world will put on Tefillin on Shabbat or Yontif. There is a true story, it's not anecdotal, but in the early years of the state, it may be the first election or the second election, so the Mapai was campaigning, and they're trying to get every vote possible. And the few religious Jews are yelling and shouting that they're not religious, they hate religion, they're anti-religious. So to show they're religious, one of the Mapainiks comes into the main shul in Tel Aviv, the Beit Knesset HaGadol on Shabbos, wearing tefillin. The guy went to shul, and he knew when you go to shul, you put it, he knew from the outer hand, you put on talis, you put on tefillin. Never dawned upon him that Shabbos you don't wear tefillin. But all right, Shabbos and Yontif, there's no question, we don't wear tefillin. What about Cholamoid? And here, I'll tell you what I heard from the Rav, and it's the Rishonim, you can see it already in the Rishonim. You see, with Cholamoid, there's a basic question. Shabbos and Yontif, there's no doubt that there's Kedushat Hayom. We say Kiddush. Chol HaMoed, we don't say Kiddush, but we do Daven Musaf. So there's a basic question, intrinsically, does Chol HaMoed have Kedushat Hayom? Either you can say it has Kedushat Hayom, so how is it different than Yontif? It has a Het HaMelacha. Certain things that you can't do on Yontif, you're allowed to do on Chol HaMoed. Or no, it has no Kedushat Hayom. Basically, it's a day of Chol, but it has certain semblances of the fact that it's part of a regal, it's part of a big Yontif. And that's why you should be able to put on tefillin. If you say the day is essentially Kadosh with a Hetam Alacha or a little bit more than Yontif, then you have an oath, you don't put on tefillin. But if you say the day is essentially Chulin with an overtone, a mask of some Kedusha, because you are saying Musaf, then you don't put on tefillin. And this is a tremendous machloket. And you can view it halachically, you can view it emotionally, you can view it philosophically, you can view it kabbalistically. Look into Sif Bet, B'chol HaMoed, the Mechabe Paskins gam asur laniach tefillin mechatam hazeh biatzmo sheyemei chalamoed heim gam kein ot. You see, the Mechabe Paskins very clearly no tefillin. If you're from the Eidot HaMizrach and you follow the Beit Yosef, you follow the Mechabe, then you're not allowed to put on tefillin. The Yesh Omrim, this is the Ramah, Shechalamoyed Chayev B'tefillin. And the Ramah goes even further. V'cheino agin b'chol gelilot elu l'anicham b'moed ulevarech aleihem. Ela she'ein mevarchim aleihem b'kol ram b'beit ha'kneset k'mo shayimot ha'shana. Very fascinating Ramah. Paskins clearly, it's a Yom Chol, there's a Chiyuv of Tefillin, you even make a Bracha, but not like the other days. What does that mean? Going to Shul, you'll see people make a Bracha aloud, so you have the Schut of answering Amen. Chalamayid, you mute the Bracha, quietly, not too loud. Look into the Mishnah Brura, look into the Taz. Gentlemen, the Taz, Terei Zahav, says, put it on, Chalamoid, don't make a bracha. Once already, it's a Safek, a Machloikis, the Rambam versus the Rush, basically. Bracha Teine Ma'akvot. And therefore, put it on, don't make a bracha. B'dieved yoyotze. The Vilna Gaon took the position it has kedushat hayom. Absolutely, don't make a bracha. He came out against the Ramah. Look at his Haga'ah. There's no source for the Ramah. No, the Briska had a real problem. Approach it with lumdus. Mitzvah tefillin is a chi of the oraita. It's not just a din derabbanan. It's a chi of the oraita. Kshatim liyot al yedecha v'chayu letotafot b'neinecha. What do you mean not to put them on? But a machloikes, the Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch, chi of the oraita, the Vilna Gaon. So they came up with a solution beyond the Mishnah Brura. What did the Rav tell his Talmidim to do? Mari Rebowitz said, you make a Tanai. If it's a Chiyuv Tefillin, then what you're putting on B'Torah Tefillin, but you don't make a Bracha, Bracha Teinu Ma'akvot, like the Mishnah Brura, like the Taz. And if it's not a Chiyuv Tefillin, then this is a kishut ba'alma. It's a decoration. It's a jewelry. Don't we have, what's the greatest gift you can give your wife? Yishel David. Wasn't that beautiful jewelry described in the Gemara? Aren't these entire sugyas and Shabbos? What is jewelry? Who wears jewelry? A woman, a man? What is the difference? It's not an easy, not a black and white answer. But this was the Rav's psak. What's interesting is halacha lemaaser in the state of Israel is one of the great miracles, if not the greatest miracle. No one puts on tefillin on chalamayit. Sfadim, Ashkenazim, Litvakim, and as Vic said, if anyone still remembers that in Borough Park, he put on tefillin chalamayit and he made a tanai and he didn't make a bracha and he feels bad not doing it. And by the way, he's right. It's a suffix d'oraita. You go up to your house, your apartment, you close the doors, you pull down the shades, and you can put on tefillin without a bracha and say Shema Yisrael. But you see, we're touching upon unbelievable problems here. What is the halacha? Didn't Rakefet say 1,001 times the halacha demands, commands obedience? No? Safek d'oraita. No one puts on tefillin. More than that, if you are, I saw in shoes that one, that a French tourist, so it was in Katamon. Guy was davening, put on tefillin, they jumped on him. I felt bad for him. God, he's a tourist. That's not Ashkenazi, he's Ashkenazi, obviously. He's putting on tefillin, don't jump. Explain to him that next time, if he feels the need, put it on in his home. But with all the machloket in Israel, it's interesting. I have my own theory here. I don't know if I'm right halachically, but I think I'm right emotionally. If you grew up in Gullis, so what if it's Chol HaMoed? Everything is going on. The world is normal. The world is usual. The banks are open. The post office is delivering mail. The trains are running. All right, they do a hike. They go to a park and all the kids have entertainment and go on slides and whatnot. In Israel, you feel Chol HaMoed. It's very different. You go to the bank after 12 o'clock, the bank is closed. Post office is never open, but on Chol HaMoed, it's certainly going to close earlier. The stores, the food stores, there's a feeling of Yantif. If you live in Yerushalayim and you live in North Yerushalayim, Chassidim are going with their shtreimels on Chol HaMoed. You understand there's a lot to be said about a shtreimel, that it has absolutely no halachic significance. This is true. Let's not make fools out of ourselves. When I went to Russia the first time, came out early morning, Friday morning, I almost fainted. I thought it was in Gula. Everyone is wearing a shtreimel, men, women. All right, that's the clothes they wore then. But the shtreimel has become part of that portable ghetto that Chassidim build around themselves. I have a copyright on this term. If you use it, give me credit. Maybe Gula Leolam. Portable ghetto. But it's beautiful. You see Chassidim waiting for the bus Thursday afternoon. They're going to a wedding. Tuesday they're going to a wedding. They're wearing a shtreimel. A Brit Mila. Early in the morning, La Briot, on a Wednesday, they're going with a shtreimel. Oh, a Brit Mila, a Simcha. It's beautiful. Chol HaMoed, you see the shtreimels. There's Kedushat Hayom. The masses coming to the Kotel. Birchat Kohanim at the Kotel. That goes back to something from the Rishonim, from the Hasidei Ashkenaz. And they found the source. I remember when they introduced Birchat Kohanim, it was in my time already, early 70s, I believe, or right after the Yom Kippur War. Tens of thousands of Jews, now it can't work out with Europe, but I knew people flew in from Europe for one day just to be at Birchat Kohanim at the Kotel. Not just individuals, thousands, thousands. Italy, France, Britain, it's a 3-hour flight, no big deal. And they flew in for, so you feel the Kedusha. So maybe I'm right. That's why here you don't have the machloikis anymore. No one puts on tefillin. There's a feeling, an acclamation, a consensus. There's Kedusha Payom. Okay. As far as tefillin, Chol HaMoed, if you want to take it further, I'll give you another source, and it's interesting, you can develop it. You go further in the Mishnah Brura, Shulchan Aruch, Hilchat Chol HaMoed, Siman Tav Kaf Mem Hei, and Sifkatan Gimel. A whole question, can you write tefillin Chol HaMoed? Tell me, are you allowed to write on Chol HaMoed? When would you be allowed to write on Chol HaMoed? Dava Ha'avad, right or wrong? Can you shop in Chol HaMoed? What about if a store suddenly you're in an area that you're not going to be after Yantif, and you see suits available, face 200 shekel, they're selling out all their stock. Could be you're allowed to buy. It's a Dava Ovid. If you don't buy it now, you'll never get it at this price. Dava Ovid, writing tefillin, how can it be Dava Ovid? Ellie, two ways. One way is, you're so poor, you have no money for Yontif. If you can write tefillin and sell them, you'll have money. For you, it's dava avad. Yitz may be another way. If a person, if people put on tefillin chalamay, then someone doesn't have tefillin, for him it's dava avad. You'd be allowed to write for him, you see? So it's an interesting topic. But the question is basic. Where do you draw the line? What are the guidelines? And by the way, Rav Menashe Klein just acknowledges that there is a machlokes. You're absolutely right. He knows that this is not the real issue. Effie, you missed my introduction. You have to know what we're talking about here. We're talking about, you have an Erev in Woodmere? If you follow the Rambam, my friend, you are Mechalalei Shabbos B'Parhesia, according to Reb Moshe Bick. If you don't follow the Rambam, I mean, if you follow what the Mechilim came up with based upon what they believe is a Shitat Rashi, etc. All right, that's one issue. And he acknowledges it. Then the story with the sunset, he says, you're absolutely right that we Hungarians, we who follow Rabbeinu Tam, we who paskin like Rabbeinu Tam, you're absolutely right. We should be machmir. We should end Shabbos a lot later. Our whole concept of the calendar changes. But he says, and here he's telling the truth, I am told that years ago, the Agudas HaRabbanim of America reached the conclusion, we paskin like the Gaonim. And everyone has to have the same Shabbat. And Shabbat begins 18 minutes, 20 minutes before Shkia, the first Shkia, not Rabbeinu Tam Shkia. When it comes to Motzai Shabbat, yes, perhaps you wish to be Machmir, add on Rabbeinu Tam Shkia, popularly called 72 minutes. But that is not Me'ika Hadin, it's only a Chumrah. And here, Reb Menashe Klein gives the Litvakin a twitch, puts a needle in. What, excuse me?
Did he say how long to wait?
No, he said it's either for 42 minutes or 72 minutes. It's either you follow the Agudas Rabbanim or you're going to be mocking me like Rabbeinu Tam. But he puts a pin in and he says, and take a look at you Litvakin, Rabbeinu, Reb Chaim, everyone following the Gaon was machmir like Rabbeinu Tam. And the Mishnah Brura also paskins that you should be machmir like Rabbeinu Tam. And 90% of the Litvakin do not follow Reb Chaim, do not follow the Mishnah Brura, but simply are mekil with the earliest shear possible, like the Gaonim, 42, 46 minutes, whatever your minhag is, he gives him a kvetch. And he's right. It's very interesting. We're talking about Chumrah. We're talking about Chilul Shabbos. We're talking about Chiyuv Mita. We're talking about Karet. And nevertheless, we are mekil. Now, he touches upon another problem. And he doesn't answer these questions. I'll answer it the best I can at the very end, but not now. Touches upon another problem. How many matzah do you take for the Seder? In Yonadi Yoma. We all here in this room take three. The Vilna Gaon Paskind, you have to take two. The Lumdis is 100% like the Vilna Gaon. Though it's very simple. Why do we take three? Because there's a din in Lechem only. that it's Leil HaSeder, Lechem Oni, so we have to break one matzah. So we take three, we should be left with two, Lechem Mishnah. The Vilna Gaon says very logically, if there's a din in Lechem Oni, it means within the Lechem Mishnah, you have to show the Lechem Oni. You follow me, Scotty? What are you breaking a third matzah? A third matzah is meaningless. You take two. Absolutely. With that psak, with the Rav Seder, you're going against every Rav, every psak, every minhag, all of Klal Yisrael. Go further, I'm quoting from him. Take another example. Rosh Chodesh. Did you ever open up a good siddur and look at the Kriya in Rosh Chodesh? You have the normal Kriya and the Kriya of the Gaon. It's between Kohen Levi. You'll understand what I'm talking about. Look at the siddur. Tell me, who gave the Gaon the right to change Minhag Yisrael, to change the Kriya? Who gave him the right? And look what we're looking at. Everyone lay in one way. And suddenly the Gaon comes and he adjusts it. Gives another example. Give you an example that you're going to have tomorrow. Tainit Esther. What are we laying on at Tainit? Vayachal Moshe. What does the Gemara in Megillah say to laying on a Tainit? Brachot and Klalot. We totally changed the Minhag according to the Gemara. I shouldn't say the Minhag. What the Nohag was is a better Hebrew word. What the Nohag was according to the Gemara, Brachot and Klalot. Suddenly Yomo found something in Masechet Sofrim. That's where you find it. And Masechet Sofrim says, Vayechal. You find something in Masechet Sofrim and you knock out an open Gemara? All right. And he comes back to the Gaon. He can't get rid of the Gaon. The Piyutim. All of Klal Yisrael says Piyut. According to the Vilna Gaon, a good deal of the Piyut is knocked out. He's Chayshish for Hefsek in the davening. You all know Friday night. Where do you daven? No, Vishamru, Bnei Yisrael at Shabbat. I daven, the shul I daven in, they sing it. Vishamru, Bnei Yisrael at Shabbat. That's the shul I daven with my son-in-law as the president, Chazon Yecheskel. Oh, Rivka, Chas v'chalilah. It's against the Gaon. The Shtiblach. Depends on which minyan you're davening at, right or wrong. And you can go on and on with examples. Baruch Hashem li'olam, amen v'amen. How many of us say it anymore, right? In Eretz Yisrael, the minhag was lachat chilama to say it. We're safer here. But in Chutz La'aretz, some say it, some don't. What's going on? And you can bring hundreds of examples where the Gaon, particularly the Vilna Gaon, you can bring from the Hasidic world where people came along and upset the basic halacha. All right. All this is minor league play. The real attack is on Rabbi Nasha Klein. How dare you go against the Mishkanot Yaakov? Now, we couldn't ask that question. Why can't we ask that question? Yeah, I grew up in America. I have Litvish blood in me, but I have a feeling for Hasidus. Eli can't ask that question. He grew up in Teaneck. He's learned in YU, Litvish Rebbeim. But Hasidic overtones. But Reb Chaim Dovbeg Oletsky, the Einikol, the Reb Simcha Zissel, coming from Bris, to him, the Mishkanot Yaakov is the Posek Achron on this question. And he throws it at Rav Menashe Klein. And you got to understand, when we're talking about, as I told you, this tshuva was written in 1982, In 1982, the Machloket was full steam ahead about the Erev and Baruch Park. This is literally, it began in the 70s, and there Reb Moshe was so machmia, and this young upstart, the chutzpah, that the Ungava Rav disagrees with Reb Moshe, miata, maata, and this is what Rabbi Galevsky is really going after him on. Okay. And here, the next paragraph, he begins his answer. And he's very powerful. And he says, what you're asking me, Yedidi, my dear friend, Ahuvi, he says, you're asking me about klolim in psak. When someone comes along and gives a new psak, he has a right, but only if others accept him. When you come along and give a new psak, and the other poskim do not accept you, shekva nahag alma the lo kavatei, because the world does not follow this psak, we don't have to accept it. We don't have to bow to it. That psak is no more than a chumrah. And you know that the Beit Ephraim dealt with the Mishkanot Yaakov and negated his proofs and showed that he was wrong and refused to agree. And in the world of the Beit Ephraim, the Polish world, the Hasidic world, the Hungarian world, everyone followed his psak. And even the Mishnah Brura and the Aruch HaShulchan and not only followed his psak, but Maran HaChazonish added another concept which absolutely shows there is no Rishut HaRabim, the Oraita, Bisman Hazeh. Who remembers the Chazonish? We spent many weeks on it. And it's very interesting, the Chazonish is very innovative, very innovative. Tell me, go to the Upper West Side, walk on Broadway Avenue, walk on West End, walk on Amsterdam, walk on any of these streets, walk on the cross streets. What do you see? House after house after house. Tremendous buildings. 10 tvachim? With 10 tvachim, you don't even get to the windows of the first floor. No? Do you have a mechitza better than this? These mechitza, these houses, these buildings, totally fencing the area. If that's the case, you might even have, for Rishut HaRabim, an example where doors are closed all the time. It's the Chazonish. Just think. You have openings? How big are the openings? Over the openings, you have Tzirat HaPesach. It's fascinating what the Chazonish said. Is it something new? Was it always like this? Were homes always built this way? All right, you have to go back and check. You'll see what Reb Menashe Klein says later about Borough Park. Woodmere, you certainly don't have this feeling. Why not? Effie, why not? You have a house, you have a backyard, you have a front yard. The bigger your property, the more valuable the house, the more room around it. All right? It's hard to say. It's like the Upper West Side, where when you look up, all you see are tremendous, tremendous buildings. You have the Biyana building, 441 West End Avenue, right or wrong, the Biyana Shtibel in the building, owned by the Biyana family. Look up, the house net, wow, one after another. What you see? So Rav Menashe Klein is saying to him, we have a right to view contemporary times. Situations fluctuate. The reality is different. The Mishnah Yaakov, fine. But even in his time, the Beth Ephraim came out totally against him and refuted him. Nowadays, take a look at the Chazon Ish. Yesh lanu al mi lismoch. And he says, yes, I know. Your people claim that if we're somach on the edge, we're machana leishabbos beprachesia. But can you really say that? Can you really accuse Jews who have Rabbanim Gedolei Yisrael and follow the Chazon Ish and follow the Beit Ephraim and follow, if you're familiar with the Mishnah Berurah, you're right, he's machmir if you wish, but if you want to be machmir, but Meikra Hadin, look into the Bir, I quoted all this years ago, the Bir Halacha, Meikra Hadin, he paskins that we go against the Rambam. And look at the Aruch HaShulchan. You mean to say that you're going to claim their machala leShabbos beParchesia? And then he says, and Gamma Run, I'm ending up with this, but Gamma Run Hagon Reb Moshe Feinstein Shlita. And why does he mention Reb Moshe? Because Reb Moshe was against the Erev in Brooklyn. But even Reb Moshe was Matir and Erev in Few Gardens and in Riverdale.
Why did he do that?
Excuse me?
Why did he do that?
He held that they were smaller entities than Brooklyn or Manhattan. His famous fuck with Brooklyn was that if you go Yud Beit Mil by Yud Beit Mil, you get Lower Manhattan in the framework. And once you get Lower Manhattan in the framework, you have more than 600,000 people on the street during the daytime. That was Reb Moshe's big chumrah. But Riverdale and Kew Gardens, which is way above Lower Manhattan, even Reb Moshe was matir. But once you're matir, you're going against the Mishkanot Yaakov. You're going against the Rambam. In Riverdale, aren't the streets more than Tadsai and Amat? What number did you give us before? 20 what? 24 foot. Nul, the average street in Riverdale, Kew Gardens, v'kame ayarat k'tanot u'gadolat, that Reb Moshe was matir, and he went against the Rambam. How can the Mishkanot Yaakov be correct? And he goes further, and he says, atzeinu hakadosha, in the Holy Land, Yesh namei ruvim b'chol makom, Yerushalayim, yesh ba gimel eruvim. You know what he's talking about. He's absolutely right. There are three different eruvs in Yerushalayim. There's the eruv of the Rabbanut, which is the big eruv around the entire city. There's the eruv of the Eder Charedit, which covers the part around Geula Me'esharim, but doesn't cover the entire city. And then you have the Erev of Agudat Yisrael, which is more inclusive than the Erev of the Eder Charedit, but not as big as the entire city. Now, I don't know whether the Erev of Agudat Yisrael is still active today. It could be, because if you look who's putting up the Erev for the city, who the experts are, they are members of the Eder Charedit, Agudat Yisrael. They're not the Johnny-come-latelys. So it could be Agudat Yisrael waived and is somach on the general Erev, but as far as I know, the Eder Charedit of Erev is still in existence. And even in this area, I think a certain Erev around the Givat Mordechai, that it's for the Hebron Yeshiva. But he's right that in we have Erevim. We're not machmir like the Rambam. Three Erevim in Yerushalayim, Tel Aviv, Haifa, v'chol yevi'ir, v'chol kvar v'kvar. And it goes further. Antwerp, in Belgium, Toronto, talks about Toronto, that Erev from Rabbi Graubart, that Erev goes back a long, long way already. Baltimore, and many other cities. ומלי לחשוב כל מקום שיש שם קהילת ישראל עושים ערב על סמך שאין לו רשות הרבים פחות משישים ריבו או מטעמים אחרים המוברים. והיך עכשיו נוציא לז על כל אחינו בני ישראל שחס וחלילה מחללים שבת. ועתו כהני רבנים וגויינים גדולי ישראל לא ראו את דברי המשכנות יעקב ולא היה בידם להכריע נגדו. And he says, as big as the Mishkanot Yaakov was, but if Rabbanim don't accept it, we have a right to disagree with him and argue with him. To summarize, we're in the heart of tshuva, but we have to leave the rest for next week, and then I'll answer all the questions. But fascinating. Your teacher, your Rebbe, Elliot, has come on in a bitter battle with Reb Menashe Klein. The world was shaking. Where did you live in the 70s into the 80s?
In Brooklyn.
Ah, so you remember the Machlokes. It's Machlokes. They actually, I saw with my own eyes, the when they put the Erev up in Borough Park, for a while they would cut it down. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Then I remember seeing signs, Ad Kan HaErev, it reached McDonald Avenue. And then later, it combined with the Flatbush Erev. I think today it's considered one massive Erev. But Rabbi Galinsky, coming from, Galinsky, I gave him the wrong name, Rabbi Gulevsky, my friend Rabbi Galinsky, Zechut Tzadik Levracha, but Rabbi Gulevsky, coming from Brisk, Reb, the Dayan's great grandson, wow. He puts the needle into Reb Menashe Klein. He raises the entire issue. Tefillin, all right, it's an interesting issue. When the Shabbat begin, the Brit, the Safmuruv, going against his own tradition, where do you draw the line? What do you follow? Which is Chumra? Which is Me'ikar Hadin? Mishkanot Yaakov, and this is Velazhin, this is the Soloveitchik family, well, we're talking about the Dayan, Riga, there was another famous Dayan in Brisk, Eisen, very interesting, I have grandchildren and great-grandchildren with the last name Eisen, and where do you draw the line? But you see, Reb Menashe Klein doesn't take it lying down. The Mishkanot Yaakov, all right. But we have a right to disagree. What are you going to call every Jew in the world? Samachan an Erev? Every Rav who builds an Erev? Antwerp, Toronto, Kew Gardens, Riverdale, throw in Muncie. That was the first Erev that Rav Moshe was Matia. Every place you build an Erev and you disregard the Rambam and the Tetzai and Amud, you're a Machalo Shabbos Bepehesia? Chas v'chalila. All right. Ad Kan Hayom, next week is heavyweight. I hope we'll reach some interesting conclusions. Halacha l'maisa. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, we start 9:15. So everyone has a chance to say Slichat, Davin. If you want to avoid Slichat, come to my minyan 5:30 in the morning. Their tradition from time immemorial is not to say slichat. How they get away with it, I have no idea. But that's the reality. So, Michael, you'll ask me, why don't I daven at a later minyan? I can come to Gris later, let's say. It's chevreshaft. I've been davening at this minyan. It's not a big minyan. Everyone counts. These are people I know intimately. We're good friends, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years plus. The kid came into Minyan, a young man, Nebuch, he lost a child, so he sang Kaddish. And the guy is absolutely dark, has to be Yemenite. I see he's putting on his tefillin sitting. What does that tell you, Vic? Eidat HaMizrach. Then he gets up to daven in this Ashkenazi shoe, everyone's tongue and teeth read Ashkenaz. And he davened Ashkenaz better than I could. Oh my gosh, I was floored. So in the end, there's no time to talk. Everyone runs out after davening. But I told this kid, I want you to know, 51 years ago, at this seat, there was a fella sitting, Noga Ben David. Remember Noga Ben David? Oh no, you didn't go to MTA. He went to MTA with us. Wealthy Yerushalmi family. He then went back to fight in 56. We read about the people who were killed in the war. We get the list in America, over 100 soldiers were killed, 56, Sinai campaign. There's the name Noga Ben David. We cried, you know, and never, oh God, you know, price we pay, or even there we felt it. 2 years later, Noga Ben David walks into the base medrash. You don't know what happened. It was like a pacha, the guy. Turned out it was his second cousin with the same name, Noga Ben David. So Noga Ben David, he came back. He married an Ashkenazi girl from the Upper West Side. Came back to Israel. Well-known family, David's family, Ben David. You've seen their names. They're in the news. He's my age. So Azriel Hildesheimer, the great-grandson of the Azriel Hildesheimer, the grandson, he says to me, Chatan, how are you putting on tefillin sitting? The Ramah, you have to stand. And Noga Ben David says, Eidot HaMizrach, what's your problem? But he was so integrated, Sfad Ashkenaz, he could daven in an Ashkenaz shul, and outside of the color in his face and his tefillin while he's sitting, you would think he's total Ashkenaz. So this is the reality of that minyan, and I'll tell you one drop more. Shabbos, Sam told me, the gabbai, my neighbor, my friend, Dr. Sam Dershowitz, said he spoke to this young man, and he got a little bit of the details, and he found out he's married to the granddaughter of a well-known Rav from Boston, Massachusetts. What was the name, Rabbi Kulik? Do I have it right? He's married. Do I have it right, Yitz?
Yes, that was the synagogue where before was Rabbi Mawidis.
Aha. So that's the granddaughter of Rabbi Kulik, who is his wife. So you know what Aaron Rakefet did?
And that's the show with the Rav.
Right, that the Rav was Rav there? Or
after? No, he came from Billis Cohen and Sukkos.
That's where they threw him out.
Wow. Temple Bethel.
Wow.
Orthodox synagogue called Temple.
Temple. All right. As long as it's Orthodox, call it Temple Shmemple, whatever you want.
Oh, yeah.
The Beis Hamikdash is also called Temple in English. So you know what I did? I have a 1952 membership booklet of the Agudas HaRabbanim. And I looked up, Rabbi Kulik is there. I just Xeroxed it, and I'll give it to that young man. Here, you give it to your wife, Zecha, who her grandfather was. My dear students, if anyone wants, the chief rabbi has composed a prayer, Rav Yitzchak Yosef, for the coronavirus. If anyone wishes a copy of the tefillah, it's yours. The freebies. Who asked me this question about a woman doing a Brit Milah? Yitzchak, you asked the question here. A whole article, I think this is the New York Times, in the reform movement now, there are mohalot, if I'm pronouncing it properly, one female mohel after another.
But this is a chiddush, because
when
they did not require
rhythmia. No, but when Dr. Amy Brown, a pediatric pulmonologist who lives in Irvington, New York, and is Jewish, found out she was expecting a son, she started asking friends and family about mohels. Traditionally, a mohel is a rabbi, a cantor, or another religious leader who performs the Brit Milah or Bris circumcision ceremony on an 8-year-old Jewish boy. She found the options for her son's Bris less than appealing. I learned about one man who had a license plate that said, Snippet, And I said, like, no. A month before her due date and Stuart Adamol, Dr. Round read an article about Danya Rubback, a pediatrician and a Mo, and she felt huge relief, she said, thinking that Dr. Rumnick, as a woman, would bring empathy to a procedure that so often is rote. Men have this tone of theirs. This is how it's been done, she said, and it goes on and on. And she, Shem Yirachem Aleinu, Michael, what the American assimilation has done to us. I just was, I was Sandek on a Brit last Monday, not just Sandek. My brother was Sandek on a Brit of a great-grandson at exactly the same time I was Sandek on a Brit and a great-grandson in Zichron Yaakov. We're now in Ripley's, believe it or not. And the Mo was so quick. You have no, I never saw anything like it. 1 second flat, whoop. But I had great nachat. My new great-grandson is Noam Moshe. And I almost fainted, not from the Brit, not from the blood, but when my grandson quoted from Washington why he named the baby Moshe in memory of the young boy's great-great-great-grandfather, my grandfather, who I write about in Washington. Never Machal Shabbos all the years in America. This is unbelievable. Briska family is hiding a handwritten letter of Rabbi Aaron Cutler, and that Rabbi Aaron Cutler writes that the Briska Rub's position was pro-voting, voting the Israeli election. Wow. World Zionist Congress, where do we stand? Should we vote? A halachic analysis, unbelievable. Here, the continuous rise of the Kiddush Club, as much as we object, here we have it, Glenn Fittich, am I pronouncing it right? Fittich, how do you pronounce it? I know my grandsons told me this is supposed to be great, great scotch. Oh yeah, I should have it. What's ability. Scotch, it's single malt, what is it? It's goblets. Glenn Fittich. This is the Fitbit generation discovers the Talmud. It's an unbelievable world. Here it is. Oh, you can do all of the Daf Yomi now on your little iPad, and it stares you in the face. Name it by Kohen Tashma. Here, another halachic analysis. Is it permitted to wear political yarmulkes and shul? Halachic analysis. There's one yarmulke, Trump. I think I have a Trump yarmulke. And the other one says Bernie 2020. Oh my gosh. Soft matzah is finally here. A couple that is now making soft matzahs like the Sfadim.
It's been here for a while.
Yes, Sfadim, but not in America. In America, they all get the Ashkenazic matzah, and now it looks like a nice couple. All right, I like the way they look. Beautiful. And they say it's no longer the bread of affliction. It is delicious. All right? The new head of the OU. This is a very important individual. It's a fabulous choice. Rabbi Moshe Hauer. I yet knew his father. I taught his sisters. And he's the new executive head of the OU. It's very interesting. They're dividing up the religious head with the monetary. Going to be two people running. It's what I said about YU long ago, Tisha, to divide up the presidency from the financial responsibility. This is about the Egyptian Jews, the synagogue they dedicated. Pardon me, with no Jews there. It was dedicated and desecrated at the same time. They didn't
want to be a tourist attraction.
Tourist attraction, but they didn't allow anyone from Israel come. And here's about a girl in an elite New Jersey high school. I can't believe this article, but it's the New York Times on the anti-Semitism this girl encountered. A 4.0 student drops out at the end of 3 years, and it's just unbelievable that these kids, high school kids, burn the Jews in an oven. It's beyond words. And this is Texan still fighting abortion. There's still some Yiret Shemayim left in Texas. Virginia, first southern state to ban conversion therapy for minors. That's the opposite of Texas. If anyone wants the biography of Rabbi Dov Schwartzman, they falsified the story how he became Rabbaran's son-in-law. It's not the true story, but you can't expect more. The Supreme Court, very interesting, the Supreme Court nears the moment of truth on religion. It's about kosher food, that a whole group of inmates got together and they declared a new religion, and in that religion they eat only certain food, and they're demanding that, I don't know what it is, but let's say for the sake of argument, they only eat pizza 3 times a day, or they only eat whipped cream 3 times a day. Does the government have to give them that certain food like they give kosher food? This is unbelievable. Athletes take a knee in protest during the playing of Israel anthem at Yeshiva U. Could you imagine Brooklyn College playing Yeshiva College, and some of the Brooklyn College athletes showed their disdain for the Hatikva in public? This is very moving. I give all the credit to YU people, J.J. Schechter and others. They're searching in European cemeteries soldiers who fell in World War II, who were Jewish, remained buried in Europe, and have crosses on their graves instead of Magen Davids. And they just put up a Star of David for Private Benjamin Garadetsky. This is Buffalo, can't believe it. The Buffalo Archdiocese has declared bankruptcy because of all the lawsuits against it for sexual behavior. And here's the bad news. When you go back to America, if and when you'll ever be able to go back or visit, you no longer get plastic bags in the supermarket, exactly like the state of Israel. The only difference being in Israel, when the edict began, they had to give out those new bags. I have about 20 of them already. I've got enough to last 10 lifetimes. In America, it's a proper bag. One full dollar. Until we meet again in health and happiness tomorrow morning at 9:15, look at the beautiful weather and just don't listen to the terrible news. Be'ezrat Hashem, it should be a fabulous week, a fabulous Purim. And I don't know what the politicians, but I'm starting to think there may very well be a fourth election. And if that's the case, the guy who became a citizen, Chaim Goldberg, my Talmud, last year, right? If he's going to be in Ripley's Believe It, young man becomes Israeli citizen and within 1 year votes in 4 national elections. 9:15 tomorrow until we begin in health and happiness. Das Vidanya. I wish it with Chelm. Here I think it's Rishon. And Chelm was stupidity. Here it's Rishon.
The buildings. Massive buildings. What if there's spaces between the buildings, large spaces?
Depends how big the space is. Yeah, generally, between the buildings in New York, the space is too small.
Streets. You come to
so if the space is really big, really they allow 10 a month, but if it's really big, you can build it Surat HaPesach at the start and at the end.
You have to do something.
Yeah, you build it Surat HaPesach. The gauntlet of the buildings is that it's like doors that are closed, so then you can be Samach on the Surat HaPesach.
But the openings have to be
different. Yeah.
Rav Kulik's daughter lives in, in Yerushalayim for many, many years. She's friends with my wife.
Right.
Rabinowitz is her married name. So she's been here for many years. She has children, grandchildren here. Lives near Emek Rafaim.
Wow.
She's been living here for many years. So the two daughters of rabbis get together and tell stories
out of the rabbi.
It's nice to hear. What's it like to be a daughter of a rabbi? I read this talk there.
Right.
The assimilation was well underway before the conservative movement issued their ruling about driving.
I understand, but I still stand on what I said. And I know from my own experience, there were people who would have remained from, but the Yetzer Hara, and the rabbi says it's okay, the rabbi said. But I agree, of course I agree.
Shalom Sameach.
Love him.
Tadarabah.
Bruchim. Love home.
Okay. Sharona Rabinowitz. Is the daughter of Rav Kulik. That's her name. Sharona
Rabinowitz.
Rabbi, imagine, first of all, apologies. Last week I was working on something and I wasn't here, and I didn't want to give Sherry more work to let you know by emailing you.
It's okay.
I'm assuming in the future weeks we're going to elaborate on the shita of Rav Menashe Klein and when we can go against like former psak. The way that you're understanding it is...
I'm going to explain it next week, what you're talking about. But the Erev, I'm not. I gave 2.5 years worth of shurim that you can pick up.
Yeah, just like it seems like circular otherwise to say, like, when something changes what's been knowing, it's like if it's picked up, it's like, okay, well, what gives anyone the right to pick it up if it's arguing that everything that's been knowing? And the examples that you're giving aren't all societal changes. Like, Lechemoni is not a societal change.
No, Lechemoni is a minor example. Beside that, we're going to try to set down roots, and I'll give you a source that if you take it and learn it well and listen to 2.5 years of Shayurim, all your questions will be answered.
Okay.
For